Watson. Go.
Hello and welcome to From the Be All End. This is the episode where we're going to be looking back on Tuesday night's game against Wolverhampton Wanderers and looking ahead to Saturday's game against Everton. And I'm Simon Evans and joined by Justin Connolly, Chris Bowden and Paul Woodhouse. A near full crew, no Andrew Bowden, Andrew Grieve for us this week. Let's start off by looking back quickly then at Tuesday's game against Wolves. A disappointing result after the performance at Chelsea raised hopes that this was the start of a revival. But let's have some assessment of the performance and the result. Chris Bowden, how did you see Tuesday's performance?
Yeah, it's just a bit of a lost opportunity, really, on the overall scale of things. But If you're facing a Wolves side that, you know, devoid of any sort of anything resembling a Premier League strike force, they were, you know, as there for the taking as they'll ever be, to be honest. And once Burnley get their noses in front at home against Wolves, typically that would be pretty much job done. And it's a fabulous volley. You know, it gets better every time you see it from Brun Larsen. You know, does superbly well to control it, guide it into the corner. And, just a shame that, again, you're talking about officials and you can always caveat everything with, well, we could have defended that better. But it just it beggars belief that free kick was given in the first place. You know, officials, they've got to be 100% on... We're talking about penalty decisions and sending offs and absolutely critical decisions. You've got to be cast iron convinced. And they've got VAR to help them out. You know, they haven't got VAR to help them out with, you know, smaller pieces like, you know, throw-ins, free kicks, etc. But if you can't see that, there's fresh air between them. You know, the lad's tripped up. But as ever, he's on the floor and he's looking up, isn't he? Where's my free kick? Where's my free kick? And, you know, conned another referee. And, just a shame. Just couldn't... It's a bit of a blow. You know, come through that Forest with 3-0 up at half-time. That probably took the wind out of a few sails. But there's a shaft of light, but there's no more. We've left it too late, haven't we?
Have we, Justin, do you think?
Well, I think that the shaft of light is diminishing in size as the days go on, isn't it? I think that was a game. It's more disappointing that we should and could have won that game quite comfortably. I thought we were much the better side throughout. Their tactics, as Chris alludes to there, was to throw themselves on the floor and look for free kicks whenever anybody came near them. And try and keep us at bay, and that their tactics worked in the end, didn't they? They scored from that free kick, and we just couldn't seem to find the key to unlock that. You know, we there was a lot of knocking the ball around on the edge of the box. I think if Fofana had an unusually sort of, I'd describe his performance as a bit lackadaisical. He was a bit kind of half asleep. He seemed sort of on his heels all the time and not really on it. I think if he'd been to his usual standards, I think, you know, we would have found a way to get a second goal in the spell when we're on top. But I think with the results going against us in other areas, we're still there, aren't we? And we're still in touch. It's still mathematically possible. And I suppose while that continues, we've got to keep going, haven't we? And we've got another sort of massive game this weekend. Yeah, I mean, every game is massive, isn't it? But if we continue to perform as well as we are performing, we will, you know, we will take it, you know, as close to the end of the season as we can. But I think that the light is slowly dimming, and a win on Saturday would put it back on again, I think. But we'll talk about that in a bit, I suppose.
Woody, we were saying that the Wolves game felt like it was a must win. Maybe they're all must wins at this stage of the season with the position we're in, but just wasn't quite enough, was it? What were your impressions overall?
Yeah, the only shaft of light I was seeing was through the James R. Grease roof. But besides that, you couldn't quite work out towards the end of the game whether it was a good point, 2 points dropped. At half time, you were thinking, this is never going to finish 1-1. Then you realise you were wrong again. And yeah. even though we played well in patches, there were nearly everybody misplaced a pass. They didn't seem to be, you know.
Mm. Apart from Murich.
Exactly. Some of it seemed extremely sloppy. But still saying that, we still had that opportunity to take the full 3 points. It's probably disappointing that we didn't. Lovely little ball from Dara O'Shea to Brun Larson, who, like Bod said, the more you see that, the better a goal it actually is.
Yeah. But
other than that, yeah, I think Fofana would have got a bobble on a penalty on Tuesday night. But yeah, I think it's just now that gap has just increased by an additional point, 7 behind Everton, game in hand, etc. It's starting to look bleaker and bleaker, even though we're performing better.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, the contrast between that game and the Chelsea one, which we were all so uplifted by. I wonder if the team, the way it is now, the imperfect team that it is, with its limitations, isn't actually better suited for away games where they don't have that much of the ball. Because, you know, our possession play still is a bit laboured, isn't it, at times? Like, the passing isn't going to a man, into his stride. They're hitting the passes at people rather than just in front of them. The people are needing one touch too many, really. Mm. You forgive that more when you're away from home and you're just scrapping for everything and you're happy if you can get the odd breakaway. Is that, do you think, you know, in that sense, that there's more chance of an encouraging performance, Chris, at Everton than there is at home? You know, our home form's been dreadful. Maybe we're just not that good with the ball.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But, I mean, to be fair, Tuesday night, they've just come off the back of, you know, a long trip down there. They've played for just over 45 minutes with 10 men. You know, it's an emotional one when you feel there's an injustice. You've then got to play again without, you know, you've broken up what's been effectively a settled, you know, back four. Asignon, it's just ludicrous that he had to sit out the game through a suspension, though everyone in football thought it was a nonsense. That he
just
got
one game, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. But it's a nonsense. He got a yellow card, never mind two yellow cards, and got sent off. And Darren England's reward was to referee Manchester City last night, wasn't it? No. Can't be bad. But nice. And I can see what you mean. I mean, we've seen them effective at times. In possession, sort of on the break. Not quite certain what we are really just yet. I remember that, you know, there was a fabulous break at Forest earlier this season, and the goal against Chelsea were countering the counter. We were effective. We've had periods of possession play where we've ground teams down. You know, bits and bobs from set pieces as well, but we're not. I couldn't define us, to be honest. But I just think Saturday, it could be quite toxic, Goodison. Just sort of looking at the feeling of the Everton fans, they've gone 12 without a win. You know, it's a Premier League record, which is just incredible, really. But they're looking at, I think Lampard like won 1 in 14 and Benitez 1 in 15, and people are starting to say, well, they got potted for that. What's going on, sort of thing. And I listened to Sean Dyche the other night, and he was sort of saying, well, it's in the context of a season. Yeah, nobody wants to go 12 without a win, but you've got to look at the season as a whole, as he did when he was at Burnley. And the season we finished seventh, we went 11 league games without a win. It is about if he keeps Everton up, he's done the job, especially with points deductions. But if Burnley can snatch that first goal Saturday and make that, you know, what can be a bear pit at Goodison Park, make it sort of, you know, turning on their own players, their own manager sort of thing, might get a bit of joy. And it's like Justin said, if we can beat Everton with a, you know, what's believed to be another impending points deduction, then you might well drag them into it as well.
Another one, yeah. I'm losing track of all these. I mean, it is ridiculous, really. It is. It's like, you know, it's like something out of Serie A in the 80s, isn't it? Having points reductions every other week. It's daft. But
it's so crazy doing it during the season as the season reaches its climax and nobody quite knows who's got what, when, and what we're going to need to do. And what, it's just insane, isn't it? How has this been allowed?
Forest's appeal might not be decided until after the season, though. So we still might have a situation where, depending on how the points end up, we've had Everton's deductions, but there's a massive asterisk against Notts Forest at the end of the season, and we might not know. I mean, you know, if results go really well, or Luton might not know, or you know, other teams. Yeah.
And it will be close if there is any. Exactly. It will be close. It's like VAR for the whole season, isn't it? We'll all be sat there waiting, looking at the screen, thinking, what are they going to do now?
And now they're talking about voting against points deductions, aren't they? And the NBA luxury tax, etc. So they'll probably throw that into the mix towards the end of the season and give them the points back.
I mean, I get why they want to have, you know, profit and sustainability laws and financial fair play, whichever names it's going under, whether it's UEFA or the Premier League. I understand why they want to do that. But the aim was originally, when they first brought in all these things, was to try and make the game reduce the risk of teams going bankrupt and overspending massively. And neither, you know, is he really doing that? It's all about, you know, I'm not sorry spending all that money when they came up with a team that was heavily built around loan players, like ours was this year. That made them a bit more competitive last year. Is that really bad for the Premier League? Was that bad for football? I don't think it was. I mean, when you go back to, like, you know, you look at Serie A and all those league tables with asterisks on it, when you know, Juventus, they were for corruption. They were for match fixing, you know, for serious stuff that you absolutely have to punish teams, but not reporting the sale of a player in July when selling him in August. All this kind of stuff. It just seems ridiculously petty to me, the whole thing.
Well, it's all gone. I can remember reading a book after, if you remember the Liverpool side of 87, 88, you know, they went out and they'd lost Rush. They'd gone to Juventus, and they'd signed Beardsley and Barnes and Houghton, and those three. It's probably one of the best, you know, British sides I've ever seen. You know, taking the Man City of today, Ferguson's United into the equation. But a lot of people, I mean, they spent what was effectively, you know, for the day, a hell of a lot of money, and people were accusing Liverpool of buying the title then. And, you know, like Dalglish turned around at the time, he said, you know, if we get, you know, the second biggest crowds in the country behind Man United, and, you know, you've got more money. If your commercial team creates more revenue, you've got more money. But we've gone from that to how do we police sugar daddies, basically? I mean, trying to stop the Man Cities and the PSGs and the Newcastles from having carte blanche to just spend whatever they want, you know. And it's, how do you police that? It's, so we don't want clubs going bust, and we also don't want certain clubs just, you know, with no regard for fees, for wages, for anything, just ploughing through and buying, you know, super teams. It's a funny one. I don't know. I honestly don't know where it sits, to be honest.
No, it's a weird situation, and the regulator coming in as well. You just, you know, a lot of people in the media were like really supportive of the idea of a football regulator, and that it was going to, you know, save clubs like Bury and so on and so forth. I mean, clubs at the bottom end of the fourth division have always gone into administration and bankruptcy, or gone out at league and come back. I mean, Accrington Stanley's, you know, been through that process, and so have probably, you know, a dozen or more clubs, you know.
We had Aldershot in the fourth division, didn't we? Fourth division title season.
Yeah, I remember
we went top of the league,
coming round alongside to raise money for it, and my dad telling them where to go because them Southerners wouldn't give a shit if we were in trouble.
That was all about keeping the 6 points we'd taken off them, though, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was around the time of the David Reeves bucket. I mean, perhaps we need to have a bucket for that roof you were talking about. I don't know. I think that regulator, I think, you know, a lot of people saying what a great thing it was, and they're imagining all the right people making all the right decisions. But, you know, it's a quangle. You look at the rest of them, you know, Ofcom or the ones that look after the energy supply company, are they doing a great job? It ends up being retired politicians who get these jobs, and I'm not sure that Westminster's produced such quality of people to govern the game better than the people who govern it at the moment, to be honest. But we're going on off a massive tangent there. Fofana and Foster playing as a strike pair. Justin, what did you make of that one? We haven't really seen that before, had we?
I don't think they were playing as a strike partnership. Foster was playing on a left wing for some reason. And Odebear sort of behind Fofana in the middle. I was baffled a bit by that. That's two players out of position when they're sort of almost playing in each other's position, isn't it? I think one of the problems we had against Wolves is it was a sort of inability to get behind them and get wide and get behind them, which is what Odebear does, isn't it? So I thought that was a bit of a weird combination. I thought neither Foster nor Fofana had particularly good games, and I think that is where we really, really fell down in that performance. But it's a bit of a weird kind of tactical setup. But I can understand why you'd want Odebear in the middle there, because he has got that ability to, you know, beat a man and make something happen. So you're trying to get him more in the game. But when they're defending the way they were defending, you need someone who can get around the back of them, don't you? And he was that man, but he wasn't able to do it because he was in the wrong part of the pitch. So yeah, it was just frustrating, wasn't it? There was a lot of good situations developed without really turning into chances. And we've seen that before, haven't we, this season? And it's really frustrating when you're playing against a team that's, you know, I thought they were really mediocre, and they were 10th, weren't they? I don't know if they still are, but for all the talk of this massive gulf in quality between the Premier League and the Championship, they would be a rank bad Championship side, and they're 10th in the Premier League. So I don't know where all that nonsense comes from. We win games like that if we've got the same squad and the same team as we had last season. But with this new team just not quite clicking, you know, they're too well organised and too difficult to get through. It's a shame, but I'm looking forward to Saturday. I'm not convinced we've got what it takes to get a result there, but especially when their backs up against the wall, they've been on an awful run, aren't they? They had that little rally when they got the first points deduction, didn't they? And they were using that as fuel, in the injustice as fuel, as we did at Stamford Bridge. But I've got a bad feeling about it, to be honest. I think when it comes to the crunch, they've just got a little bit more know-how at this stage of the game.
Woody, that Wolves performance, I were left with this feeling afterwards. I was thinking, it's not a bad result, really. Like, in a normal sort of season, in one of the seasons that we had under the current Everton manager, drawing at home to Wolves in a frustrating game where we didn't quite click and so on, those things happened and we stayed up. But we're now in a situation, we've lost so many bad games, you know, the Bournemouth and so on, that that it becomes a bad result.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We needed to be a lot more proactive, and Vinny got stuck in his stick or twist again, and things started to drift, and he things needed to be changed, and it didn't necessarily happen on Tuesday night. And it felt like the whole game was a little bit like that. We seemed to get a little bit, I don't know, stuck in the headlights in the second half and didn't want to take the initiative, which is always a little bit worrying because, like we're saying, if you're going to go on and at least make a fist of this, you've got to see that we're going to take it on. And we looked a little bit apprehensive at times on Tuesday night, which you can understand. And I think, to Justin's point, it'll probably be even worse Everton because they'll just bully us out of it. They'll just bully us out of it. But the way that Wolves played, yeah, like you say, it wound up a decent-ish point, but it's obviously not enough, and we had to get three. We had to get three, and we didn't look like it towards the end.
No, I mean, it also leaves you with that feeling. You sort of think, if the team is a bit better now, and it has been performing better over the last month than it was until Mirić came back into the team. We don't need to go all over that again, but that's just so obvious now, isn't it? That it does make you wonder, doesn't it? You know, where would we be in the league table if the trigger had been pulled a lot earlier in the season? And that's going to be the overwhelming feeling at the end of this year if we don't do it. The games like that Wolves one wouldn't have mattered so much if we'd have had a great team out and sorted out teams like Bournemouth, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can go back to the passion of Mirić, the way he sort of breaks the lines. He makes unexpected passes as well. He makes risky passes, and they can, he can be costly at times, but he just gives Burnley another dimension. But it's all about, again, you're talking about the former manager and a couple of his sayings. And, the really tight games, making those fall in your favour. We don't have that yet. We're in that sort of game where no side's really, on top of the better side, but you just manage to, get your nose in front and, whatever, score from a set play and see it through sort of thing. The amount of times that season Burnley finished seventh, the amount of games where they found a way from somewhere, Newcastle at home, Everton at home, and so on and so forth, where they just weren't particularly great, but had that nous and that know-how that Justin's worrying that Everton may be recover at the weekend. You think of that physicality, and it sounds like Onana might be a doubt, which would be a huge boost in that respect. But you're looking at, like, can we cope aerially with Calvert-Lewin? Can we cause Tarkowski and Branthwaite enough problems? On the face of it, it's difficult, but I do think it'll be a horrible place on Saturday for an Everton player if Burnley start well. And even get their noses in front, it might be a really interesting afternoon. But we've seen that matchup twice already. It's been men against boys on both occasions. But that's the last time they won as well, isn't it?
yeah. No, it can be a nasty place, Goodison. I've covered quite a few games there, and they'll turn against their own team very, very quickly. A misplaced pass in the 12th minute and suddenly the whole atmosphere and the ground changes, and they can be a nasty bunch towards their own team when they're in that kind of mood, Everton. And they probably are close to that mood, aren't they? Let's see how that one goes. The other big item, of course, that's come up this week has been the club accounts were released. We're going to have a deeper dive into those next week, hopefully with somebody who doesn't have to say, "I'm not an accountant," like we're all going to say. but very briefly, before we knock off here, I mean, the situation was in simple terms, the headline item was the club posted a 27.9 million post-tax loss, a significant drop for a 26 million profit in the previous accounting period. And quite a few people picking up on this statement in it. In the event of relegation, the group will turn over and parachute payments will be needed. We need to take steps to reduce costs and borrowing to a level sustainable. Well, we know that, but there is this phrase about going concern. Will the club be a going concern if it can't find that money? Which does sound quite alarming and worrying. I'm sure people tell us that there's nothing to be worried about. But Justin, what did you make of about the financial statement?
Well, I think you're right. It is a worry, isn't it? I mean, it feels very much like there are some dark clouds gathering on the horizon, and they don't seem that too far away. I mean, this is for the championship season, isn't it, that we're talking about? So we're looking at having sold a lot of players at the start of that season to offset the spend. And I don't see us having, even if we stay up, I don't really see us having a large number of players that we will get a large amount of money for to sustain this going forward. So it is a worry. But, you know, the one thing it isn't is a surprise, is it? This is actually right. The plan. This is actually what they said they were going to do. They are very much speculating to accumulate. The model, you know, is Brighton, isn't it? Buy them cheap, sell them high. And if you look at their balance sheet in their accounts, it's quite remarkable how much cash they've got on hand now, how much profit they made on the sales. But I think that's the destination that we are hoping to travel to, but we're nowhere near that level yet. And like I say, what worries me is relegation not only reduces the income, but it also reduces the value of the playing staff, doesn't it? The idea that we can just sort of offset the losses and patch the accounts up with a few, you know, Dwight McNeils and Nathan Collins and, you know, those players we sold in that summer, those players aren't there, I don't think, in this squad. There aren't that many whose value has gone up, certainly not to be making the kind of money that we seem to need if we're going to avoid, you know, deep, choppy waters in the future. But I'm not an accountant, am I? So,
Woody, you're not an accountant either. But what's your sort of sensation when you see those headlines or read that document?
Sensation. It depends what ongoing concern means, doesn't it? Does it mean, you know, fire sale? Where is it on the spectrum of panic? And I think, to Justin's point, everybody else's point, really, it's like how much of this squad do we need to sell to make up that ongoing concern? And obviously people will be telling us over the next few weeks or so, but that's the weird thing. How threadbare does a squad become? And does it become yet another rebuilding effort for next season? And you know what I mean? It's like, do we have to have a new team every year? Is this how we're going to play it? You know, it's, I don't know. It's.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder how much, you know, I mean, if we're not going to get big money for people, you wonder how much pressure there'll be to get wages off the bill. So, you know, you think of somebody like Bayer, who hasn't played a lot through injury and so on, who costs quite a lot of money. Are we going to get that money back for him at the end of this season? Probably not. But do they need to get his wages off the bill? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see in the summer some players, not saying him, but some players move into Europe and we never really, you know, undisclosed fee and some number comes out from Europe that sounds quite low and we're told, well, you know, we don't really know how much he's gone from. I think, you know, a lot of it won't be transparent. But we don't know how much are they going to, you know, they might take another gamble, might take another loan out. I mean, that's another thing, is the whole loan situation and which company it is. I mean, there's an awful lot of confusion there, isn't there, Chris?
I wouldn't know where to start, to be honest. That's it. When I was working at the paper, I spoke to, you see, the likes of Kieran Maguire and other financial experts and got them to walk me through it, really, and I was still none the wiser when they had, to be honest. it blows my mind, the whole thing. But like I say, there's certain caveats that were concerning, and as the lads are saying, we can't expect, you know, the manager to go and start again for a third successive summer, Vincent, build a new team and expect it to come good again. And like I say, who we've had this debate umpteen times this season, who's actually enhanced their value or retained their value? You know, like your likes of Amdouni. Amdouni's now over the piece, hasn't done enough, has he, to justify his fee or enhance his fee?
No.
Odegaard, I think people will be looking at him and think, this kid's got a high ceiling. He's a diamond. He's a young lad. He's in Thierry Henry's French under-21s. Colly Osho again, like I say, suspicions he might return very soon, but before the end of the season, he'd done enough, hadn't he, to he'd come for a relatively minuscule fee in comparison. But Trafford hasn't, Bayer's had a lot of time out. There's an awful lot of players there. Has Foster even enhanced his value?
No.
Over the piece, probably not. No. So it's. Mm. It's going to be an interesting one, but
You know who has increased his value? Bizarrely, Muric.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who's watched, Championship Goalkeeper of the Year, and then he's played absolutely brilliant in every game he's played in the Premier League, he's bound to have increased his money.
Absolutely.
We will get into all this in more detail with people who know what they're talking about with the money, because we are just speculating, really. It is concerning. It's all concerning with an ownership that's taken out so many loans and where there's such little transparency, and we don't really know what's going on, and the club's not making money, that's for sure. But we'll get into that with people who know what they're talking about. What we will know what we're talking about is what we perform like at Everton, which is what we'll talk about next time that we're back on this podcast. And until then, have a good weekend. Up the Clarets, and all the best. Cheers.
Jimmy McElroy to Watson. Go.